This week we're talking with Gil Polson, new writer at MyMac.com, and of course we've got Sam Levin's Cool Mac Picks, MyMac Podcast number 178.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And welcome to another exciting week of MyMac Magazine's podcast. Of course, formerly MyMac.com. Now it's MyMac Magazine. Still MyMac.com on the website, though. this is a little bit different. We don't have David Cohen. We're still waiting for Lee. He's stuck in traffic somewhere, probably. But we do have Guy Searle. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Tim. How are you today?
I am doing really, really well. You know, one of these days, Guy, we're going to have to spend a show getting to know you better. It's been a long time. God. We've got a lot of new listeners. A lot of people probably don't know who you are, so we're going to have to remedy that really soon. Maybe even later today if we run out of topics.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sure that's really a good thing?
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Maybe not so much.
And we also have Gil Polson. Hello, Gil.
Hello, everybody.
So you're new at MyMac Magazine. You've only been with us for, what, a little over a month now?
Yeah, just a month or two at the most.
And it's kind of funny how, and I think I mentioned this on the show, the way that I kind of met you was through Robert Hazelrig. He sends out these emails to a lot of different people with his Mac or Apple thoughts on a pretty consistent basis, and he puts everything in the two, so I see everybody who's getting these emails. Instead of, you know, blind carbon copying everybody so nobody knows, everything's into the two, so I see everybody. And you are one of the people that would spend a lot of time responding to some of his rants or raves or what do you guys think about this. And your answers to his emails were always very concise, well-written. And I thought, man, this guy might make a good writer. So I contacted you, and here you are.
Yeah, I should be doing some writing on my own site, but I kind of neglect that. probably a year since I've actually posted anything.
I think I mentioned that.
So this is good for me to, you know, to be writing again.
I think I mentioned that in my email to you. That there's nothing on your site. How about writing again?
Yes, this kind of forced me into it, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's always nice to get into a situation where you can write about something that you're passionate about. And I take it you're pretty passionate about the Macintosh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do this for a living, so
yeah.
I kind of have to.
So what do you do for a living? Explain who you are and what you do.
Well, since the late 90s, basically I will go to your home, your business, wherever you have a Mac, and help you any problems you might be having.
Me?
If you want to buy something new, you know, what should you buy, you know, those kinds of things. And I have clients ranging from one person working in their rec room up to companies at the Children's Place, Jackson Hewitt. So it kind of, you know, kind of runs the gamut of the client base.
Do you get burned out of talking about Macs all the time if you're doing it for a living and then you're writing about it when you're in your spare time at home and here you are on a podcast? Does it get a little, ugh, I don't even want to talk about it anymore?
You know, not too often. You would think it would, but I don't know. Somehow I just always find it fascinating. And, you know, if somebody asks me a question, I just kind of go off, and usually they really have to work to shut me up.
You'll fit in really well with us then.
Yeah, really. Welcome home. One of the things that Lee and I have been chatting about on a few podcasts, and Owen Rubin as well, was these collections of Macs that we all have. Lee has a much larger collection than I do, and Owen has some really rare stuff. And then here you are. You've been featured in a magazine. You have a basically a museum for Macintosh in your basement, right?
Yeah, it's kind of frightening when the plumber comes and they don't really know what to make of it, because literally it is sort of like a museum. I have little placards in front of each machine indicating when it was released, what the original price was, and things like that. And I've have kind of these drop curtains all around the bottom of the counter with the Mac logo, and I try to really make it look like an actual museum.
Well, we're going to hold off talking about a whole lot of that if Lee shows up. We'll get back to that in a little bit if Lee shows up, because I know he wanted to be in on that conversation. So while we're waiting for that, let's talk about what's going on in the Mac world and the Apple universe right now. I think it's amazing, and it's been, and Gil and I were talking about this, and I'll talk a little bit about this with Sam Levin later in the show, but Apple right now came out with the news that they are now the number one music reseller in the United States. They have passed Best Buy. What do you think, Guy?
That's, you know, it was really just a matter of time. People just aren't really buying physical media that much anymore. And I'm just happy that it's Apple instead of
Microsoft.
No, not so much Microsoft, but all of the Windows media file type stores with Microsoft's DRM. Of course, I'm not happy about any DRM, but if you have to have it, at least Apple's is liberal enough to where you can actually get rid of it if you absolutely want to.
Yeah, it's called iMovie.
Yeah. there's a few other ways too.
Yeah, you could burn a CD and then re-import it.
Sure.
You lose all the metadata, but that's not too difficult to put in. I mean,
no.
I think we've all done that. I like to stream my music to the video game consoles when I'm playing a video game, say on the 360 or the PS2. And I can't do that with some of the copy-protected music that Apple has in the iTunes. So I just open it up in iMovie, export it, and then re-import it as an MP3 in iTunes. And
does that work with the new version?
With the new version of what?
Of iMovie?
I don't use the new version of iMovie. I think it sucks. It's on my computer.
Right.
And I do like the effects that you can get out of it as far as titles. I think it works really well in that. But other than that, I think the new iMovie is horrible.
Also, I mean, both you and I have, or at least had, a relatively extensive collection of, like, G3 effects, which blows away anything that iMovie ever came with.
Absolutely. G3.com, we've been, since the second version of iMovie, I've been using it. I know it's probably about that long for you as well, Guy.
Easy.
It almost makes iMovie as easy to use. Well, I'll just say it puts
as
it up,
useful as like Final Cut. Almost.
There you go. Useful was the word.
Yeah.
So Apple is iTunes' number one music store. What do you think, Gil? Are you surprised that it went this fast, or was you expecting Apple to take a lot longer to get there?
Yeah, we were saying before, it seems amazing how quickly this happened, and you know, old school Mac people going back 10, 12 years, it just seems remarkable to me that Apple's the number one in anything.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I'm
other than customer loyalty.
I easily remember going out to talk to clients, and they would say things like, oh, Apple's going out of business in a couple of months, I hear. You know, should we sell all our Macs and stuff? And every year, it was a new crisis du jour that they were going under for some reason. And just to hear that they're number one in portable music player sales, number one in music sales itself, it's still just remarkable to me that they're winning with these things.
And it used to be, if you heard anything in Apple in the press, it was negative.
Right.
We used to have, I'm trying to remember who wrote it now.
Wasn't that on the unofficial Apple weblog?
I don't know what you mean.
The Mac Death Watch, is that what you were talking about?
No, that was on, I believe it was on Mac Observer, isn't it?
Oh, well.
I think that was Mac Observer. But we used to have an article in the downloadable edition of My Mac Magazine back in, probably 90, well, it wasn't quite 95, but somewhere.
Back in the day.
Back in the day when we all had 28.8 modems and it took 4 hours to download a 3-megabyte file, we had a writer who was, all he ever did was look through computer magazines, finding anything written about Apple, and then he would base his article on whatever he was reading, these people were reporting about Apple. And I used to love it, but it was always negative. I mean, nobody ever had good things to say about Apple. And like Gil saying now, it seems like it's always good news, isn't it?
Yeah. It mostly has been good news over the last few years. I mean, there's been a couple hiccups here and there, but you know, what company doesn't have an occasional problem?
I think it's a huge thing for Apple to be number one in iTunes. Let's see. Apple has 19% of retail music. Walmart has 15%. And number three is Best Buy at 13%. And I think you were just saying this, Guy. We just got word a couple weeks ago that Apple had passed Best Buy for the number two spot.
Yeah, I think it was like just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I honestly thought it would be probably a year or so before Apple finally passed Walmart because Walmart was so dominant. But I guess I was wrong.
Well, as I recall, it wasn't even last year that they weren't even tracked.
No, they were way down the list. So, a lot of people are asking the question, is the popularity of the iPod faltering? I think this kind of answers that question, doesn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think we have to worry about, either Apple or the iPod going away. I think how the iPod looks is going to change dramatically over the next year. I think the Classic is definitely going to be the absolute last one we see with that form factor. I think the Nano is going to stick around. I think the what's the itty bitty one?
The Shuffle?
Yeah, the Shuffle. The Shuffle's not going to go anywhere because it's just a little cheap throwaway product. I think the iPod Touch, and I think there's going to be a new model that's going to be a little bit smaller than the Touch, and that's going to end up being the new iPod. But I think that's the form factor that Apple's going for.
You think Apple's going to do away eventually with the screenless iPod, i.e. the Shuffle, that even the cheap model is going to have some kind of a LCD on it?
No, I don't think so. I think the Shuffle fits a niche that a lot of people want. They do just want something they can throw a couple things on and hit play and go for a run or, whatever it is that they're doing that's on the run where they don't have to keep constantly looking down on it to see what it's doing.
So, Gil, you're a Mac fan, obviously. Are you an Apple fan in general? Do you buy Apple products a lot, or is it just really the Macs that you focus on? In other words, are you into Apple TV and the iPods and the iPhone and all that?
Oh, sure. I have an iPhone. In addition to the museum, I have a mini downstairs on my television and probably about 20, 25 computers in the house altogether.
Wow.
And I have an iPod.
Besides the collection?
Well, I count the collection. I have some recyclables in the garage too. That counts for three or four right now. but I tend to collect from clients and say, I need to get rid of these, and I'll say, oh, I'll recycle them for you. And I pull the parts off anything useful before I recycle them. But I'm a consumer of all Apple products too.
So we do have a John Nemirovsky spot to get to. So let's do that real quick, and then we'll be right back with Gil and Guy. And I don't think Lee's going to be here with us tonight, so we're going to get talking about a little bit more Apple information and Gil's Mac collection. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to All Over the Mac on the My Mac podcast. We're delighted to have Evie Goodyear back with us. She reviewed a book on GarageBand and our Book Bites Live segment about a year or so ago. Nice to see you again, Evie.
Hi, nice to see you too.
And what have you been doing on your Macintosh since the last time we met you when you were working on GarageBand and reviewing that GarageBand book?
I've still been playing GarageBand, and I've also been converting it over to iTunes.
What do you mean?
I can import it, any tracks that I make off GarageBand, and I import it to iTunes so I can play it off iTunes instead of just always going back to my file in GarageBand.
Are you talking about creations that you make yourself in GarageBand?
Yeah.
So do you have a keyboard, a digital keyboard that's hooked up to your computer that you create the music on?
Yeah, I use a MIDI that my dad gave me, and it can go with any instrument that GarageBand options me off for as software.
And then what's the process of going from there to iTunes?
It just takes all the tracks that I've, how many segments I've done it in, and then it takes even a minute to convert it over into iTunes, and then I can play it, and it makes my own playlist of things that I've previously done in GarageBand.
How do they sound?
They sound good, but the MIDI sound is not probably at its best quality, but it still comes out all right.
Have you tried with the MIDI altering the sound to get it to be an enhanced MIDI track?
Not really, but I have tried.
So that's something to work on for the future. Well, what other things do you do on your Macintosh?
I play with iMovie.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you got the original G3 one-piece bubble iMac, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What color is yours?
Mine is white.
And what kind of stuff can you do in iMovie on your white original G3 iMac?
I can make a DVD out of the movies I make, but I need the program iDVD into my computer as a separate program. But I'm allowed to, once I make a film and import it into the iMovie by recording, it takes it and it's supposed to like convert it into the CD. If I had iDVD and it makes like sections and I can do a lot with it.
What kind of camera are you using?
I can't remember exactly what it is. I just know it's a Kodak camera.
A video camera?
It has video on it with sound.
I see. How's the quality from that?
It's actually really good. It's better than my mom's.
How did you learn how to do the stuff in iMovie?
I've been playing with iMovie a lot since I first got a computer. So every time when my dad moved my computer from my old Mac, it just got better.
Well, is it easy to learn iMovie?
If you play with it a lot. I didn't read any books on it, so I kind of had to learn by myself.
Well, are you going to be upgrading your computer so that you can use the advanced features in the new iMovie and also the iDVD?
Yeah, my dad has an update, and I've played with that, and it's actually, I really like it, and we might consider updating mine.
Well, let's talk, any other things you do on your computer?
Not really. I just play with GarageBand, iMovie, and then I just listen to songs off iTunes.
Well, let's talk about a new device you've been playing with. It's called the Travel Sound Water-Resistant iPod Player with AM and FM Radio in Stereo, and we'll put a link to this on our show notes. It's made by iDotSound, and we have reviewed some of their products in the past. How long have you been using this Travel Sound portable little suitcase boombox?
I've been using it for a week.
And what's your overall opinion of it?
I actually really like it. I think it's really good.
How does the iPod fit into it?
It fits inside it. It's like a case, kind of suitcase kind of thing. And there's a spot where you can stick your iPod, and it has like a secure place for it.
Which iPod do you have in there?
I have a Nano, white Nano.
The original Nano or the new shorter Nano?
The original.
And does it fit in there nice and snug?
Yeah.
Does it fit only that Nano, or does it fit other computers, other iPods also?
It fits only the Nano in the case, but there's a way in the back where you can move it out, and it can use as other iPods then, too.
For our listeners, obviously you can't see it, but it's like a little suitcase with a funny little face on it. It's about 8 inches square by about 3 inches deep. We'll put a link to it, but it does say water resistant. Have you gone swimming or gone in the shower with this?
No, not yet, because I kind of like carrying it around too much.
And what have you and your friends thought of the quality of the sound?
They thought it was actually really good. They were surprised at how high it could go, too, because it goes really, really loud with the volume.
Does it start to distort when it gets near the top volume?
Kind of, but it kind of also depends on the song.
But what about the radio? I mean, here in Arizona, our radio reception is pretty unreliable.
Yeah, it is good once you get it going, but in some areas it kind of has a static touch.
What about power? There's no electrical power. Obviously, you can't carry it around, so this has batteries in it, right?
Yep.
And what is it, 4 AA's or something like that?
Yeah.
Any idea how long the batteries are going to last?
I have no idea because I've been using it for a week with the same batteries.
And it hasn't pooped out since
then?
No,
it has not died on me.
Now, we don't know how much this thing costs. We'll look it up. But how would you rate it? I mean, on a 1 to 5 scale.
I would rate it at least a 4, around there, because it is really good and I really like it. And it has good sound, better with the iPod. But either way, I really enjoy carrying it around and like listening through it.
But is there an iPod control? Is there any way to control your iPod?
Only if you open it and use your actual iPod. That's the only downside.
So how do you decide what songs are going to play?
I make a playlist, and then I play that. I make certain different kind of playlists, and if I feel that mood, then I'll change it to that playlist and let it play.
Okay, we're going to pause for a minute. We're going to find out how much this costs. We'll be right back. Well, we looked it up at the company website, iDotSound.net, and it comes in white or black. We're talking about the Travel Sound. And Evie, come on over here. She's still over at the computer. And it's what, $34.99?
Yep.
$34.99. So as a young, how old are you now?
I'm 14.
So for a 14-year-old, is this something that you'd be wanting to save $35 for?
Probably. I'm not sure, because most people, it's really based on their opinion of how they like it.
Yeah, but I'm asking you, is this worth $35?
Not, but I'd probably say no.
Why not?
Because it doesn't look like it should be worth at least that much. Maybe something, maybe I'm not saying it's bad to have it in the 30s or something, but it doesn't seem like it should be worth at least that much. It should be worth this, a little less, just a little.
Okay, maybe $30. Yeah. So the quality is what, out of 5? What would you say?
The quality, I'd say a 4 too.
4 out of 5 as far as the quality.
Yeah, unless you go too high.
Mm-hmm. And which do you think most of our listeners, young listeners, would prefer, the white one or the black one?
The black one.
Why is that?
Because black looks more suitable than the white one.
Okay, I'd be afraid that the white one would get all dirty and all scruffed up.
Yeah, and you could see it.
Now, any other advice for our young listeners or our not-so-much young listeners on just things that they could do on their Macintosh or their iPod that we haven't talked about today?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, and we hope to have you back here on the My Mac Podcast on All Over the Mac.
And we're back with Sam Levin. Sam Levin, Cool Mac Picks. What you got for us this week, Sam?
All right. Well, there's a bunch of really cool gadgets and accessories that have always come in for the iPod and iPhone. But I want to talk to you about what Belkin's doing. You know, they're well known in the industry for doing cables and accessories, but they've come out with something really useful for all of us that have multiple types of gadgets and input devices. And one of them is called the Belkin Mini Surge Protector with a USB charger. So what it will allow you to do is plug into the wall, has two separate AC jacks, as well as two separate USB input jacks.
Sweet.
So if you need to charge two iPods, an iPhone, an iPod, and your MacBook or any other AC power device, you can do it all simultaneously. How many times do you need to charge more than one device?
Yeah, almost every day.
Almost every day, but also when you're traveling. So this is small enough to throw in your bag. I still would like it smaller. That's my only, you know, gripe. And I said, hey, make it half the size, but it's got a surge protector built in.
Kind of so right at the top. I kind of like that. It's depending on how your plugs are, but it looks like it's kind of like right on the side, right on the top of it.
Right. It's well made. This thing, I mean, is heavy duty. It's only $24.99, and I think it's pretty useful for someone that's on the go that's carrying multiple devices. Many people have USB devices nowadays anyway. So that's from Belkin. And also, they just started shipping their Tune Studio. Now, I don't have the product yet. I'm supposed to get it in the next week or so. But Tune Studio is a all-in-one audio mixer for the iPod.
Now, this is the thing that you slide the iPod right into, correct?
Absolutely. You slide the iPod in. It doesn't work, I believe, with an iPod Touch or an iPhone, but
no.
It works with almost all the rest of the iPods, from the fourth gen all the way up to the iPod Touch.
And, no, iPod Classic. It doesn't work with the Touch.
Right. That's what I meant. It doesn't work with the Touch. It works with the Classic and all the other and I believe the fifth gen. It's on the site if you go to Belkin.com, and we'll post all the information. It's $249, and it's got a mixer. You can plug in XLR jacks, whether your instruments have that, or a mic. So instead of having a mixer, whoops, that's my phone. Sorry.
Yeah, if that's for me, I'm not here.
Hold on a second. Oh, all right. Anyway, so that's what they have from Belkin.
Let's go back to the mini surge for a second. $25. I'm really impressed with this. If somebody has an iPod, they're not too worried about, I don't need to sync it to my iTunes, nothing's changed, I just need to recharge it. This is a perfect solution, and you're not taking up probably a needed USB port on your computer at the time either.
Hold on, let me let that guy go. I'll call you right back, okay? Bye. All right, so, say that again.
I said, this is nice because it frees up two USB ports on your Mac, and if you don't need to sync your iPhone, your iTouch, or your iPod
right
at that moment with right iTunes, this will give it all the juice you need. And you can do it in any room as long as you have a power plug.
That's all you need is a power plug, and I just find it's pretty useful. For $25, I mean, you're going to need something like this anyway, but it provides, you know, a lot of different things in a small package, though I still would like it smaller.
But it does have three power plugs on it too. So I mean, it's not just the USB. It's three full size plugs.
It's three full-size plugs you can use, and I always are in need of an extra power source. And when you travel, how many of us looking for power? And, you know, if someone finds it, someone's using it. So now you can unplug the power, his power source, plug yours in, your mini surge protector, and share the power with not just you, but two other people.
That's awesome.
I know.
Neat product.
Yep. It's pretty cool. Belkin has been doing some cool stuff, including the Tune Studio, which we'll find out more about when I get it, because I really don't do a lot of mixing. I think you do a lot more than that than I do, but I think it looks really cool for people that do audio, a lot of audio recording, and use a mixer, and a lot of people have those. Four-channel, it's a four-channel mixer, and you slide your iPod in, and you can attach professional-level XLR mics to this.
As long as they don't require phantom power. It doesn't work with phantom power mics.
Correct.
Yep. Correct. But, no, it looks really cool.
It's nice. Next up, we've got our fun friends from Griffin Technology. They've come up with a line of headphones called the Tune Buds Mobile and Tune Buds Color. They work with all the iPods, including the iPhone. And the Tune Buds Mobile is basically a headphone set with a built-in mic.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of like Apple's, except I think nicer because the buds fit, I think, comfortably in your ear. And it's got a little mic switch on it. And you just connect it. It's got a little lapel clasp so you can connect it. I connect it to my seatbelt and then connect it to the iPhone. And away you go. It's really well done. It's inexpensive. It's $39.99. And then they've got their normal headphones or earbuds called Tune Buds, and they come in a bunch of different colors. They're $19 or $19.99, and they fit in all of the iPods, including the iPhone. And they do have a new product. I think it's called the Smart Talk. It basically allows you to plug any headphone into it, and it becomes a mic. It's got a built-in mic.
So
they do have that option. And I'm supposed to get it in the next couple days, so we could talk about that later. It's from Griffin Technology. They've done a lot of cool iPod stuff for many years, so check it out. Next up, Pinnacle Systems Video Transfer.
Now, I've read about this. This is kind of interesting.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool hardware device. Now, Pinnacle Systems is known in the industry for doing some cool video hardware devices like transferring your CD or your DVD to your PC. They've never been a Mac company or iPod company for that matter. This device is platform independent. It requires no PC. You don't touch a PC. You connect this device into your video source, meaning cable box, TV, DVD. It does not matter. As long as it's got S-Video or the standard yellow, red, and white jacks, right? So you plug that in. I'm plugging it in to S-Video because I want the best quality. And then it's got a USB back or jack on it. And also it's got a connector so that you can connect your iPod. You can connect an external hard drive. What I use it for is connecting it to a USB thumb drive.
Okay.
Because it's small and compact. And it absolutely works. One button. You have three different resolutions you can set it for.
Including MPEG-4 with H.264 encoding.
Exactly. So once that's set that way, which you don't need to go to any software or anything, three blue lights turn on. You plug your USB device in or your iPod into the device and hit one button. It records until you hit the button again. And it will keep recording. There's no TiVo function, so it's push button on off, which is fine. And you can record I don't know how many hours onto a 2 gig thumb drive, but obviously you want it the highest resolution, in my opinion. I tested it for about 5 minutes on Scarface that was on Comcast, and it was flawless. I mean, absolutely perfect. It's not expensive. It's $129.99. And it comes with the cables. It comes with everything that you need in the box except for your USB thumb drive or your iPod or external device that you're going to plug it into. My only complaint is if your iPod is not formatted in FAT32, and you know mm-hmm. what that means? That yeah, means PC. If you're a Mac person and you formatted your iPod as a Mac connected to a Mac, it won't work.
No, but you know what? The USB 2.0 thumb drives, you can get 2 or 4 gigs
cheap
now. So, cheap. And actually, a 2 gig will get you a couple hours at least.
And I recommend the thumb drives. And by the way, two of the best are Kingston and SanDisk. Both, any of those I would use. You can use any, but I use those brands. I plugged it in on a 2 or 4 gig drive and it was so simple. And the other advantage is, with those drives, you could take that and plug it into anything, Mac, PC, doesn't matter, and watch the movie right there, either via QuickTime or iTunes or anything that will read the H.264 file.
Yeah, you know what? I think this would be really great for a lot of people still have old VHS tapes with family movies on, and it's still not the easiest thing to get those onto your Mac so you can edit and clean them up in iMovie. This would be a perfect solution for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it works. I was very pleased. Now I have it plugged in and just left there, and I call it TiVo for the rest of us, because you're empowering the user now. They could take their content anytime, any day. I would like to see a version that you could program. I don't know what they would call it, but maybe the Video Transfer Pro, where you can actually program it from your Mac or PC and do some edits and whatnot. But for the money, this thing works. I recommend it.
$130?
$130. And last up, our friend Christopher Breen of Peach Pit Press, he's come up with a really cool little pocket guide called the iPhone Pocket Guide. And it's $9, $9.99, and it talks about all the cool things that you can do with the iPhone. It's basically a refresher and a quick guide for iPhone users.
And it's interesting.
It's small. It'll fit in your hand. Chris is known in the industry for producing the iPod book, the Secrets of iPod. He's done like 4 or 5 generations of that book. So he's known as the iPod guy. And he is a great writer. Not only is he a great writer, he's an entertainer. He's a keyboard player. So,
yes, we've had him on the show, actually.
Okay, so he's a musician. I've seen his stuff. He is really good, and he writes clearly. You can understand everything that he's talking about. So if you want to ever give something, a gift to someone, and you don't want to spend a lot of money, but something that you would find useful, I recommend this. I've been giving his iPod books to people for years.
It's only $10, right?
It's $10. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what? I mean, it's on their site, $9.99. And, of course, in Canada, you have to pay more.
And you think that would be the opposite way right now because the dollar is worth less than the Canadian dollar.
But. Well, in the back of the book, it says $14.99. But I went to the website. It said $9.99. So maybe they're having a fire sale. Chris, if you're listening, they're discounting your book. But I think it's cool, and I recommend it. Of course I recommend it because it's good. And Peach Pit is well known in the industry of a publisher.
Quality.
Creates great Mac, iPod books, everything, you name it, from Photoshop to all sorts of other really good, helpful hints and tips. So that's it.
That's 6 products from Sam Levin this week with his cool Mac picks. We've got the Belkin Mini Surge Protector and the Tune Studio. We've got the Griffin Technologies TuneBuds Mobile and TuneBuds Color, the Pinnacle Systems Video Transfer, and, of course, the iPod or iPhone Pocket Guide by Chris Breen. Sam, we really appreciate you coming on the show. Anything new coming up here next week or week after?
Well, there is. There's a couple new iPhone goodies. We're going to surprise people, but basically the code word, I know this is funny, but it's called Naked. That's the code word. That's the name of the product. Even though you were spoofing on that last show with Dave Hamilton, this is the name of the product. And we're going to give some away to listeners. It's a pretty cool case.
Before we let you go, Sam, I wanted to get your opinion. News came out today.
Mm-hmm.
NPD numbers were released early. In the United States, iTunes is now the number one music store. it passed Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I'm not really that surprised.
You think that goes directly towards the power and the popularity of the iPod, the iPhone, and do you see that changing anytime soon?
Well, I think that it speaks more than that. No, I think it's only going to get bigger, not just because of the popularity, Tim, of the iPod or iPhone. It's mobile devices that are connected and wireless, and what people are doing, how they're disseminating their content, how we're purchasing content as consumers. We're going online. We're buying more online. We're listening more online, just like your show. You know, mm-hmm. You don't go to a magazine to buy My Mac or to turn on the radio to find, you know, this kind of content. I'm not saying radio is dead. That's not true at all. But this is only getting bigger. The bricks and mortar are still going to be there, and I still think they're important. But this kind of media is being purchased in droves because look at the iPod. I call it the iPod generation. You know, they're not finding out about this from Time Magazine. They're listening to their friends, what they're talking about, and their friends are all online. So it's only going to get bigger, and there's going to be other people out there, not just iTunes. But that complements and validates everything Apple has been doing for a long time. So I'm happy about it.
Well, if it's cool and it's about Macs or the iPhone or the iPod, Sam Levin's going to talk about it right here on the My Mac podcast. Sam, we thank you very much. And if anyone's looking for any links for any product Sam talks about, check out mymac.com.
Or samlevin.com.
Or samlevin.com. Show 178 will have all the links this week. Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
And we're back with Guy Searle, Gil Polson, and me, Tim Robertson. Anything happened in the last 5 minutes that the audience should know about? I can't think of anything.
No, it's been a little quiet.
So, Gil, why a Mac museum? And how the heck did you get your wife to agree to turn your basement into this little faux museum that's all done up and has this whole computer collection? Yeah. How'd you talk her into
that?
Yeah,
I want to hear about this.
I think most people want to know about this.
Well, guys, anyway.
Yeah, strangely enough, it wasn't that difficult. I thought it would be a lot harder than it was. But, you know, half the basement is actually taken up with the museum, and the other half I put kind of theater-style seating dinner on a big screen, so we have sort of a media room on the other side. So it's a little bit of a compromise in a sense of, you know, one part of it is multipurpose, and only one part is a museum. But you'd still think it would be kind of a battle to get that accomplished. But she not only liked the idea, but she actually sewed the little curtains for me to go along the bottom of the counters. So she was, you know, pretty much with it all the way. I'm still amazed by that.
Yeah, wives will surprise you sometimes.
Every now and then.
Yes, now she does
usually,
use Macs
usually not
at
in
work.
A good way, though. She does use Macs
yes.
at work? Is that how you met her?
Actually, yes. I was called in to do some training for a newspaper down in Freehold, and she worked in the advertising department, and that's actually how we met.
That's awesome. You got anything, Guy?
We got some news.
No, I mean about his museum.
Oh, about his museum.
Yeah, we'll get to news in a little bit.
I was looking around earlier, and I couldn't find any pictures of it. Where would people go to find images from that museum?
Well, it's funny you should ask that.
Hey.
They can go to server.altimac.com/museum.
And I hope you'll email me a copy of that link so I can put it in the show notes.
Sure.
That way, anybody listening, just go up to My Mac Podcast number 178 up at mymac.com, and you'll find a link directly to it. In fact, I think what I'll do, you let me know which picture you like the best on there, Gil, and I'll use that for the artwork for this show. So anybody that's on a full-size iPod or iPod Touch or iPhone, just look at your iPhone and you'll see a picture of the museum, or at least, you know, a computer that's in the museum.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you got to go with the TAM for that.
Oh, you know, I really don't like you because of that. I've been dying for a 20th anniversary Macintosh. Since they were released, of course, when they were first released, they were $10,000. They quickly dropped to $7,000, but even on eBay, used ones that are broke and don't even work generally go for a couple hundred dollars. Why do you think these machines are worth so much money to so many people?
Well, I think it just shows everything that we're looking at now with the iMac. You know, before it also came up, that you got a vertical optical drive, you have built-in speakers and a subwoofer. It was, you know, an LCD screen. It was small, but it's still an LCD. It really kind of was a precursor of the current iMac in a lot of ways.
I agree. The screen kind of sucks. I mean, it really, at the time, what it really is it's a notebook rejiggered. But I still think that's one of the most attractive computers I've ever seen, Mac or otherwise. I just think it's a really cool-looking computer.
Yeah, leather palm rests.
It looks like something that would be in the Batcave. And, in fact, wasn't the 20th anniversary Mac actually in one of the Batman movies?
Yeah, it definitely was. Alfred was using it. I'm not sure it was the first or second one, but you see Alfred at Bruce Wayne's desk using this.
Yeah, I remember that, and I thought, wow, look at that. That was a Mac. Everybody remember when there was websites that the only thing they did was their entire dedication of the website was for tracking Macs in the media. So if it was in a movie, in Independence Day, it's right here. Mission Impossible, you know, they all use Macs. Or in this television series, it's sitting on Mimi's desk. That sort of thing. I mean, I think the big show at the time was America's Funniest Videos. They had an entire wall made up of the gumdrop iMacs. I mean, it was amazing. And there was websites dedicated to just tracking that type of a thing. You don't see that anymore too much.
Yeah, I think people don't have that kind of time.
I don't think it's that they don't have that kind of time. I think it's Macs are so much more popular than they ever have been that it's not that big of a deal to see a Mac out in the wild anymore.
True.
I always thought it was interesting that whenever you did see a Mac on some kind of TV show or movie, you clearly identified as a Mac, but whatever is on screen was always Windows or some kind of made-up system.
Yeah.
You never see the Mac made-up OS systems actually are very running popular. On the Mac.
No, again, going back to Batman, he had an onboard computer on this round screen, and it was Mac OS X. Because you can see the dock, and the dock was literally warped into a half circle at the bottom of the little bat computer thing, which I thought, wow, that's kind of weird. How do I get a round screen? And would I even want a round screen?
Yeah.
I always thought, you remember those TVs that, when you see old type of TVs from like the 50s and I don't think so much in the 60s, but mostly in the 50s, where it's just the screen kind of floats above this box. And it's kind of on like rails on each side of it to hold the screen. I've always wanted to see someone modify something like that into a computer, and I've never seen anyone do it.
Hmm. Like in an old sci-fi movie, like Plan 9 from Outer Space or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. One of those old type of screens that, you know, kind of steampunkish, but not quite. I always thought that would make a really cool mod to turn into a Macintosh, and I've never seen anyone do it. I don't even know how you would do it, but it would be pretty cool.
You'd have to be pretty geeky just to attempt something like that.
Or, I don't know, to think about it. So, Guy, I understand there's a Mac Trojan horse out in the wild.
Yes, yes, there is. It's called, God, I don't even know if I can say this. Immunizator.
It's
making the. It's basically claiming to be a virus scanner looking for privacy attacks on your computer, and all it really does is after it does, you know, it probably makes the hard drive whir a little bit. Then it comes back and says, there's all these problems, and if you'll just buy our software, then you won't have these problems anymore. And obviously, it's not like it was in the old days in the Windows world where. You know, you go to some website and it automatically downloads and starts this little bit of trickery. You know, you actually have to go and search this out, install it, and have it do, you know, whatever it is that it does. And, you know, it's really not that big a deal. But this is really, you know, social engineering is the way that most of these kinds of things are going to be from now on, I think. Because security on computers is getting much better, even on the Windows side. And it's just not like it was in the Wild Wild West days. And that's a good thing.
You think this is going to be more prevalent in the future, Gil?
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, social engineering is really more the way to go because you can always seem to convince people that they need to be afraid of something that's going to happen to them. And you know, many of my clients will say, you know, my computer's running slow. I know I have a virus. And I'll say, you know, you don't have a virus. There's something else going on. Trust me. But there's a lot of paranoia. And even no matter how much you tell people, it's, you know, there's no virus or don't worry about it, they're still inclined to respond to these warnings. So.
Well, you know, Gene Munster at Piper Jaffray is now saying that Apple is holding 21% of the consumer market and 10% worldwide. So obviously that's gone way up, right?
Yeah, way, way up.
What do you think, Guy?
I don't really know about these numbers. I mean, I copied this story down, but I kind of doubt these numbers. I can't see Apple at being 21% in the United States, and even just in the consumer market. I think that their resurgence...
Have you been in an Apple store lately,
well,
Guy?
I got three of them right around me, and they're almost always
have
crowded.
You ever been in one? Yeah, I've never been in an Apple store that wasn't just swamped.
But that's a huge jump from what, 5 to 6% they were saying just, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, but how many people are going into – how many people – if you go to Target or another big box reseller that sells computers – how many people do you see walking out with a computer on an average basis? Not very often. You go into an Apple store, and obviously it's an Apple store, but still you see, if you're at one for more than 10 minutes, you will see someone leave the store with a computer.
No, that's true.
I've never been into an Apple store and didn't see someone walk out with a new computer.
No.
So I don't really question these numbers. I think it's probably pretty
10%
accurate.
10% worldwide?
Worldwide, I don't know. Is Apple really that big in the rest of the world?
I think they've got a significant presence in Europe and parts of Asia. But kind of a funny story. Do you remember when the original Mac Portable came out? Do you know where I saw one for the very first time? Was Dakar, Senegal, on the west coast of Africa it wasn't an Apple store, but it was a store that sold Macintosh computers. And, you know, that kind of cracked me up at the time. I remember there was a company in Taiwan that had reverse engineered Apple's firmware, I think, and were making portable Macs.
Yeah.
I looked up that company when I was in Taiwan one time. I knocked on the door, and as soon as I knocked on the door opened up like just a crack, and I was like, "Hi, are you guys selling Macs?" And, no Macs here. Go away. Click. You know, just wouldn't even talk to me. Probably thought I was like an Apple lawyer or something.
Well, I don't think that there's any question at this point, at least here in the United States, that we are in a recession.
Right.
And I think what happens during a recession is people stop spending money on items that they don't feel is needed. And if they've already got a computer and it works just fine, I don't think they're going to be in any big hurry to get out there and buy a brand new computer. But I don't think that holds true with Apple as much as it does a common PC. Do you? I think people are still going to buy Apples regardless.
Well, the nice thing about having Macs as compared to regular Windows PCs is that they remain current for much longer, and they're able to run newer software longer than most Windows PCs that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't really have to worry about Trojan horses, iMutinator, Musinator, whatever, notwithstanding.
Right.
We're not seeing viruses. We're not seeing these attacks against Mac that the PC users are seeing all the time. Less so with Vista.
Yeah.
Got to give it up for Vista.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at least they're not being attacked as much as they were with XP.
Well, Vista's security model is much improved.
A lot better.
Over what they
had
before.
It's still not as good as the Mac.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're also being attacked a lot more.
Exactly. So the people who are actually trying Macs for the first time, that number is significantly higher than ever before.
Yes.
More people are coming to the Mac as new Mac users from the PC. So, combine the recession that's going on right now in the United States, which is going to affect world markets, unfortunately.
Sure.
The whole war on terror, all that crap. Yeah. I really think that, and a lot of people losing their homes right now. You don't really need a computer if you're living on the street. Well, maybe an iPhone. I see computer sales as a whole slowing way down, but I just don't see Apple sales following suit, at least not to the degree that, say, Dell or HP is going to see a knockoff in sales.
Probably not, but I think Apple's,
and if that's the case,
business model and the fact that so many more people are more interested in the platform now means that, you know, people that already have Macs will probably hold on to them longer, but there's more people coming in to buy them all the time.
Right, but if both of those things are true, then, Guy, don't you think that these numbers would reflect that? And it does.
Very well could be, but the problem is it's so difficult to determine what the home market is.
Well, let's ask Gil. Gil, you it's your day job is to go help people work on the computers. Are you seeing a lot of new clients? A lot of people talking about getting Macs that never had Macs before. What's it look like from the front lines?
From my vantage point, you know, I'm really seeing no difference in the number of people who are buying new, and I am seeing a difference in going back maybe 2-3 years ago. Most of my clientele, if I talked about Windows, they would make a face. Because they're real diehard Mac people, you know. But right. More and more people now are saying, hey, I'm thinking about going to a Mac. Can I really run Windows, you know, in parallel mode and all this stuff? And I'm definitely seeing a lot more interest in the Mac side. And I really can't say that there's been any kind of downturn in the demand. You know, I'm not seeing it at all. I'm, you know, just as many people are buying Macs as they were a few years ago, if not more.
And then combine that with decrease in PC sales, and I think we're definitely going to see an increase in market share for Apple's Macs. And I think that you're seeing, and we didn't even talk about this, we're seeing a huge influx of Mac users now because they're coming from the iPhone or the iPod. They've had a great experience with Apple products already. Hey, why not get a Mac? I see that, this halo effect that we've talked about right. In the past. I see that as a big plus for Apple, and I think that has a lot to do with those numbers as well.
Well, speaking about the halo effect, I think the halo effect is much more evident with the iPhone than it ever was with the iPod.
Interesting, yeah. Maybe. I got to say, everybody that's looked at my iPhone has wanted one. A couple of the people, one of them, a very hardcore PC guy, finally got an iPod Touch. He didn't buy a Mac yet, but he did buy a Touch because he didn't want to switch a cell phone company. He was real happy with Nextel or whoever he was using. So he went and got a Touch, and he just loves it. I saw him at Christmas time, Easter, I'm sorry, and he was just ranting and raving on how great the Touch is and how bad, you know, all these other devices that he's owned over the years. And that he's never buying anything but a Touch. And that if the price of the iPhone and the service and how much that costs comes down some,
right. He's
going to buy an iPhone. I can totally see him eventually saying, you know what, I like this so much, I'm going to give a Mac a try. Tim's always saying how much better a Mac is, or at least I used to. I don't bother anymore. And he's just going to give up the PC and go the Mac route. I totally see that happening. And I think that that's happening on a much larger scale nowadays.
Yeah, I think more and more people are, you know, for so long it was you know, Apple was always the beleaguered computer company, and you don't hear that anymore.
I did want to update everybody. Last week I was talking about the time capsule and that it was not working right for me. I tried everything, repairing my disks, doing this, that, and the other. I could not get Time Machine to back up to my 1 terabyte time capsule. I am happy to announce that that is working now. I had to do an archive and install of the Mac OS. There was definitely something wrong with my OS, and I kind of had a feeling that that's where it was, but I was kind of holding off. The only other option that I didn't do that I probably should have was run Disk Warrior on it. That probably would have fixed the problem, but I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and do an archive and install. And I did that, and Time Capsule is working beautifully with Time Machine now. So, hey, good news for a change, right?
Now, you've got the Apple TV as well, right?
Yes, I do.
And how's that going?
The Apple TV is just a wonderful device, man. It's It's so great, and I'm so glad that I know Lee, because I'm getting a lot of very useful information from Lee.
That's a story he ought to write.
Absolutely. Getting a lot of useful information from him on how I could put the content on the Apple TV. I just did the entire Firefly series.
Wow.
And like four or five seasons of South Park. And that's all on the Apple TV now. But here's the thing. It was so much easier to do than I thought it would be as far as organizing it by seasons and by, you know, which episode is first and second. It was simple to do.
Well, now you're,
the tools are all out there.
You're doing movies as well, right?
Yeah, I pretty much already got all my movies on there. I've got a few more that stuff that I don't even know how I got the DVD. it's something that is probably a present or one of those times that you're at a store and you're looking through the $2 for $5 bin
right.
for DVDs and you think, oh, I'll get that for, you know, like Rudy.
Yeah.
I'm like, do I really need this on the Apple TV or even, what the heck, just in case I ever want to watch. I'm not syncing it to the Apple TV. In other words, I'm not putting the file itself on the Apple TV. I'm putting it to an external 250 gig hard drive,
right.
FireWire hard drive. And I'm option copying it into iTunes. So if iTunes is running, I can see it on the Apple TV and I can watch it streaming. No problem at all. No hiccups, no anything. It just works.
Well, did you do what Lee had suggested and you know, where you have movies that have like multiple entries, putting them into TV and setting up separate seasons for them?
Yes, it's exactly what I did. And it worked perfectly. I did find that the program that he uses, MetaX, does most of it. But with the television, if it doesn't find the artwork, it searches Amazon for the artwork for your DVD.
Right.
It doesn't do that so well with seasons of a television show because it's multiple
right.
shows and they're not named exactly the same thing.
Right.
Like Everybody Loves Chris, one of my favorite shows. I don't know if you guys
watched it. Or Everybody Hates Chris.
Everybody Hates Chris. I'm sorry. It's a brilliant show. Love it. I got the first two seasons on DVD. I haven't watched them. I watched them when they were, you know, on television.
Uh-huh.
So it's not like I haven't seen them. But I just ripped those to my Mac. And I used MetaX to kind of sort them out and clean up a lot of the metadata. But then I used iTunes itself to say what season it was and what episode it was, the name of the episodes. And it worked really
easy. You got those right off iTunes?
No, I bought the DVDs.
Oh, sorry. Right.
Yep. Can you say handbrake?
Handbrake for the win.
So what do you think of the Apple TV, Gil?
I'm especially with the version 2 software now, you know, I'm really impressed with it. But I wanted to ask you in terms of confirmation or clarification, have you rented something and had it removed before you could finish watching it?
No, I haven't.
You haven't rented anything?
Before the 24th period? Or have
no,
you,
I, no, I've,
have you done
I've
much
rented
renting,
something.
I guess is the question.
I've rented two movies so far, and it looked fine, and they played fine. But I did watch them within 24 hours because I knew if I don't,
they're gone
right. forever. But quite honestly, I don't really see the point in renting anything on iTunes. If it's something that I really want, I'll just go buy the DVD, or I can buy it right on iTunes. If my wife brings a couple movies home from the rental store, I can kind of put those on Apple TV somehow,
well,
if I really wanted to.
Yeah, can't quite figure out how you would do that.
Yeah, I don't know. So, no, I for me, I don't really see a big deal on renting in on the iTunes store. Plus, the price is just prohibitive for me. It's cheaper to go five blocks away down to the local video store and rent a DVD than it is to start downloading it and watching it, you know, an hour later on iTunes. I don't see the point. Until they make the price a whole lot cheaper for rentals. And I'm talking like 99
they
cents
won't,
for a
they
rental.
Won't for not they for a while, they won't.
2 hours. No. But 99 cents per rental. Everything's in HD, not the standard or high def. Everything's in HD. Because you're going to be watching it on your Apple TV anyways, and you can't connect that to anything that's not an HD TV. So if you're watching it on your computer, HD is no problem. If you're watching on your Apple TV, you have to have HD. So everything should be in HD, should be 99 cents, and should have at least 72 hours to watch it. Until that happens, I'm just not a big fan of the whole rental thing in iTunes.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see where it goes. It really seems like their intention was to drive you in that direction, that you don't have to go to the video store, and you don't need Netflix anymore. And that's probably not realistic
but give me
at this
a reason.
Point in time, but I wonder what will happen in the future as far as...
I don't know if it's not realistic. I just don't think that they're giving me a compelling reason not to use those services. Why should I use iTunes? What's the benefit?
It certainly isn't price.
Right, $4 or $5 a rental. Definitely isn't price.
But they won't won't change that because for the most part, I think the studios, movie studios, are
trying to keep them in
line. Not so much to keep them in line, but they're afraid that Apple will get the same type of power in video that they currently have with audio.
Big brouhaha going around on the Mac web right now is Adobe announcing that Adobe Photoshop CS4 is going to be 64-bit on Windows, 32-bit on Windows, but only 32-bit on the Macintosh. Gil, what do you think?
Well, that seems, typical of Adobe when they just talking about Acrobat 9 won't allow you to do forms in the standard version, only the Pro version on the Mac side, but the Windows side will. I don't know, but... if I'm just missing something, it seems like they go out of their way to diss the Mac community.
Yeah, but well, is it to diss the Mac community or is it to kind of smack Apple around? Because it seems like those two companies, they have this
love-hate relationship,
very rich and a very rich history together. One would not exist without the other. Apple wouldn't be around right now if Adobe stopped supporting them in the dark days, and Adobe wouldn't even be a company if it wasn't for Apple. So. They have this shared history, but it seems very contentious now more than ever. And I've got contacts at Adobe, and they don't like Apple. They don't like the way Apple treats them. So the question really is, do you see this as more of a slap to the Mac users out there or a slap in Apple's face? And do you think it has anything to do with getting Flash on the iPhone? Start with Gil.
Well, it's whether it's a slap at Apple or not, it ends up being a slap in the Mac user space, and there's certainly some resentment there. If they have issues with Apple, that's fine, but when a Mac user feels cheated because they're not going to put a feature in something that Windows has, that we get real frustrated.
Do you think 64-bit, though, is even that big of a deal for the average Photoshop user?
Most people probably don't understand the difference anyway, so I think it's probably just the concept that something is not there for the Mac, it's there for the PC user, as opposed to what exactly it is.
Well, for those who don't know that's listening to this podcast, do you want to explain the difference between 32 and 64-bit applications? If you don't want to, that's cool.
I think Guy's probably better explain.
No, probably not. Probably not so much.
You're taking advantage of more of the processor's resources to put it in a really, really crude and simple way. I don't know that I could really explain it fully
and more of the memory. And it takes advantage of more physical RAM in a computer. I don't really see the computers are getting so fast nowadays with multiple cores.
You'd be hard pressed to tell the difference.
I don't really know if 32. Yeah, exactly. I don't think that. An average Photoshop user is not going to see much of a difference between a 32-bit version and a 64-bit version. Because it would have to be a significant difference for an average user to even perceive a difference. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think, like a lot of other stories that you hear, Mac websites are making it out to be bigger than it really is. Do you agree with that, Guy?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think too many people would be able to really tell the difference anyway.
No, I don't either. But then again, here's Adobe releasing Lightroom 2 beta, and that's 64-bit for the Mac. It seems very inconsistent.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
They're releasing products right now. But let's be honest, Photoshop CS4... it's at least a year and a half away. They really just released CS3. That's only been out for a very short amount of time. And they're already talking about CS4 Photoshop. Why would they do that this early and piss off an entire
It hasn't come out yet. And there's certainly no reason why they couldn't change their minds.
It's not going to come out for a long time. It's at least a year and a half away, if not more. So I think it's this kind of crazy, to be honest. It's it's very inconsistent that they're releasing other applications in 64-bit on the Mac, but yet Photoshop, their bread and butter, 32-bit. Do you think this is going to hasten Apple simply just buying Adobe anytime soon, Gil?
Yeah, there's always rumors that's going to happen, but I don't really see that going on. Like I said, I don't really think Adobe likes Apple in the first place. I can't imagine that actually happening.
Guy's asking about our Audible sponsor, and they only paid for two ads, Guy, but we can give them another one since, you know, the first ad didn't go very well. You got any books you want to recommend?
Yeah. Most science fiction fans know that Arthur C. Clarke just recently died. And
yeah, that was sad news. But here's the funny thing. I didn't know he was still alive.
Yeah, he's been living over in Sri Lanka, or he was living over in Sri Lanka, like since the 50s. And Audible has a nice collection of some of his earlier and later stuff. It's the collected stories of Arthur C. Clarke from 1937 to 1999. It includes such things as Breaking Strange, 9 Billion Names of God, The Sentinel, which was the basis of 2001: A Space Odyssey, and a whole bunch of others. And Arthur C. Clarke was just a fantastic author. And the funny part is about this particular book, some of the people who read it, Artie Johnson, if people know who that is, Stefan, I can't even say that person's name, and I don't know who it is anyway, but Harlan Ellison actually is one of the people that is narrating some of these stories.
Really?
Yeah. Arthur C. Clarke's collected stories, 1937 to 1999, all on Audible.
Now, Gil, do you ever use audiobooks?
No, I'm trying to figure out what you said, Artie Johnson?
Yeah,
From Laughing?
Yes, I'm so I'm delighted that you got that. Yeah, Artie Johnson from Laughing.
He used to read those short poems or something, or
yeah, he used to dress up like the Nazi and had that tagline, you know,
yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to buy that one if he's on there then.
Yeah. Well, I just clicked on him, and looks like he's been quite very, very busy narrating audiobooks for Audible and various other companies.
Wow.
That's all I got for Audible. I just wanted to bring that up. I didn't know if you had still decided to talk about them this week.
Sure, why not? Did you guys ever read Robert Jordan? He passed away himself maybe a year and a half ago.
Robert Jordan. I'm not sure who that is.
He had this series that was just, it started out great. And if anybody's interested in it, just do an Audible search for Robert Jordan. And it's the Wheel of Time series. And it's kind of very Tolkien-ish in a way. Magic users and stuff like that, which I usually don't get into. But this was so well written. And he created this entire universe, a world, with its own set of rules, and it was just fabulous. Unfortunately, as the series progressed past book 4 or 5 or so, he started introducing so many new characters that I completely lost interest, and I know he died, so he never finished the series.
And Tolkien had that same kind of problem in some of his books.
Yep. But if anybody's interested in hearing a really good book, the first one in the Wheel of Time series is just fantastic. And some of the earlier books are really good, seeing how some of these characters develop. And then once you get past book, say, 6, stop reading it or stop listening to it on Audible because it's just not worth it. But
yeah, they got
first
11
books
is what I'm looking at right here.
Yeah. And it's just really, really, really fantastic. Crown of Swords was probably the last book that was worth reading. I think that was book 7. So 1 through 6 is worth reading. Anything after that, it's just like, ugh, come on. It's, you know, it was almost like it was like he was trying to impress somebody. And The Eye of the World was the first one, and it's really a fantastic series.
Hey,
up until
Gil?
A certain point.
Yeah.
Do you know where you can find all of these great audiobooks?
No, I don't. See, you're going to tell me though, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. It's at audible.com. And if you type in audible.com/mymac, you'll probably find that you don't get a darn thing because we're not being sponsored by them anymore.
Actually, the link still works. I just tried it. So.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Let's quickly talk about next week's show. You remember when we had, what was his name? Screencast guy. What was his name?
Don McAllister?
There you go. I knew you could do it, Kai. He was talking about that software that he was using for screencasting. Well, we're going to have Brian Novak. I'm sorry. Paul Carnine. Carnine. Carnine.
What's the name of the software?
Well, they're from Vera Software, so we're going to talk to them about ScreenFlow and find out what that's about, some of the other products. They actually sent me a 3-month code to use it for a couple months. Haven't used it yet. Just been too busy. But it's one of those programs that when you see it in action, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. So we're going to talk to them, find out a little bit about it. We're also going to have, if everything works out, Chris Siebold on next week. Chris is a brand new author. He has a book out there, and we're going to talk to him about it. For longtime listeners, Chris Siebold used to be on the podcast every week with his Not Mac News. At the same time, Guy Searle was on the show doing the Dashboard Minute.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I helped contribute to that book.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about it next week.
Cool.
Maybe get Chad Perry on the show, and I think that would be kind of cool. It would be the original podcast team all at the same time. You, me, Chad, and Chris. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be fun.
We're going to see if we can get that to happen. Chad might, you know, be pretty busy next week. He's not used to doing the podcast anymore.
Oh, he won't be busy.
His Thursday might be busy. He might be... His work may send him away somewhere. You never know. Up on sites right now, Rich Lefko did an iFrog's Vibes speaker system.
Right.
Kind of an interesting-looking product. I don't think it'd be anything I would necessarily be interested in, but it looks interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, actually, I blogged about that when we were at Macworld. I was very impressed with that little speaker. It's really sounds good.
We'll have to check that out then. Newer Technologies and Airport Extreme gets kind of a comparison from David Weeks. He likes the Airport Extreme a little bit better than the newer Power Max Power Router, so you can look at that review up at mymac.com. Donnie Yankolo, this is kind of neat, kind of a rockabye baby type of music, but with like rock songs, and he found this stuff up in iTunes. I thought that was really cool.
And he's a new dad.
He is a new dad. Well, I'm an old dad, yeah, but I've got a 4-month old, so this is something
old
that I'm interested in as well. David Cohen did, we talked about this a little bit last week, the black box speakers. It kind of looks like, you remember, you were at the hotel room.
Yeah, we saw them up in their hotel. They were looking for a distributor.
It kind of looked like Knight Rider a little bit in front of it. That was kind of neat.
Yeah.
And my review finally is up of Periscope. Kind of turned your Mac into
a little security
system.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I love that program. It works just fabulous. I would like to run a really long USB cable out to my front door and put a little USB cam up there.
You can.
I could, and it would work just fine because it would use multiple cameras. It's a really fantastic software. The only thing I don't really like so much about it is the picture quality. It isn't as good as I know the... it could be, but I'm happy with it. I have no complaints. I give it a 5 out of 5, which is really, really rare for me. I don't give too many programs a 5 out of 5.
Is that recorded 30 frames per second? Or
no, it's still pictures. It's still.
Oh, okay.
It literally takes a picture. So do you got anything to review or any articles coming up, Guy?
No. I'm still in the process of the ending quarter, and I am just swamped at work.
What about you, Gil? Anything coming up for you at My Mac Magazine?
Yeah, I'm pretty much finished with the Indigo 2.5 review. Matt hasn't released it officially yet, so
uh-huh.
I'm just kind of waiting for that. He promised me it would be any day, but I just think that is such cool stuff, and I've had Indigo 1.8 running for about 3 years now, so you know the ability to turn your lights on and off and all the, you know, any kind of home automation stuff. And
yeah, all the X10 stuff.
Set up a web-based interactive page for each floor of your house.
Can't wait to see it.
It's really nice. I actually put them up on the web. I don't know how much time we had, but I put my first and second floor plans up on the web. And when you click on the lighting, it actually changes state. You know, you can see a change from on to off and vice versa on the web page itself. It's just the coolest thing.
Don't publish
don't publish that
website.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you watch...
I'll flash the living room lights, tell my wife know I'm coming. you know, just something goofy like that. But it's really a lot of fun to play around with.
There used to be a system. There was a show on one of the Discovery Channel television shows about new gear coming out, new gear that you can buy. I don't think they do it anymore. I haven't seen it in a long time. And it was sensors that would follow you up the stairs. And it was on like a 5-second delay. So as you're walking up the stairs, lights are following you up the stairs. And then they would turn off behind you 5 seconds later. It was really cool. And it was kind of cool. Walking down hallways, these lights at the bottom of the hallway.
Poltergeist.
Yeah. And it was just kind of neat. And they could set it up whereas you walk into the bedroom and they'd stay on for 10 minutes and then they would turn off. That's pretty neat. That's the kind of stuff that you can do with this system,
sure,
Gil?
Actually, there's the wireless motion sensors, which you can get. I think they're maybe 10, 20 bucks a piece. You can put them in parts of your house. Like if you put them in your office doorway, when you walk into your office and the sensor picks up any kind of motion, you then tell it to, let's say, enable your email checking schedule. And then as you leave the office and it senses you passing, you can have it turn off your email checking schedule so it's not pulling down your email when you're gone.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's like practical kind of use for it. But but it's almost like whatever you can imagine, if you think hard enough, oh, I could probably do this, and there's pretty much a way to do it. That's what's so fun about it.
I've been getting a lot of emails after my comments last week about the flip video camera.
Yeah,
I guess Merlin Mann's doing a review, and he's been talking about it on a couple of different podcasts as well. And I've got a lot of email from people asking, so what do you think about the flip? And, you know, I've only had it for like a week and a half, so I don't have a whole lot of experience with it yet. But so far, so good. I really kind of like this little camera. It's amazingly small for the VCR type of video that it records, 640 by 480.
It puts out, what, AVI files?
Yes.
And doesn't it also have some special syncing software for the Mac?
But I never installed it. I haven't installed it yet, and so I don't know if I want to.
you just drag and drop, and then use QuickTime to convert it.
I use Visual Hub to convert it. I use Visual Hub to convert all my AVI type of files. Anything that doesn't play natively on a Macintosh without a bunch of other programs or plugins for QuickTime. Right. I just use Visual Hub to convert it to whatever I want, watch it on my Apple TV or what have you, and it works great. So I'm a little hesitant to install the software for the Flip. I don't know why. Maybe because my system is working really well right now. Not to say that it wouldn't if I installed the software, but I might do it on the laptop, check it there, see how it works. But
yeah.
So far, I'm impressed with the Flip. And no, a guy, to answer your next question, I have not opened my professional gaming mat yet. Still in the box. I got to get to that eventually. I said last week, it's so big, I don't know where I'm going to put it to test it. I just don't have any room.
Well, isn't that the company that sent it to you without you asking for it?
No, they actually asked first, so I can't complain about that. The DocuPen.
Oh, yeah,
haven't opened up yet. Yeah, a little scanner. It's kind of neat looking. I still haven't opened that either. I'm getting far and far behind. But I did get the Periscope review done, and I also got my Sennheiser HD 650 review done, the $600 headphones.
Yeah, that you had to send back.
No, I haven't sent it back yet.
Ah.
In fact, they're right here. See it? Right
here. Oh, yeah. I see them.
Yeah, see? I've still got them.
I'm going through the internets.
I'm going to send those back eventually. I'll probably wait for them to email. Have you sent that back yet? But I'll give you a preview. This review will go live Monday. I gave it a 5 out of 5, but really that doesn't do them justice. These are the very best headphones I've ever, ever used. And I've used a lot of headphones over the years. I've been an audiophile for far longer than I've been a Mac head. And that's saying something when you figure I started My Mac Magazine in 1995. So,
right.
These are the best headphones I've ever heard. Unfortunately, when you listen to them hooked up to, say, your computer or an iPod, and you're listening to very compressed music, i.e. 128K MP3s.
Right.
Yikes.
Not cool.
That's all I'll say. Yikes. But you listen to really good audio, wow. You forget, living in an iPod world with MP3s
right.
and AC
how good
lossless,
something can sound.
Yeah, or how good something should sound. Wow. That's all I'm going to say. If you can afford to spend this much money on headphones, buy these headphones.
For something other than an iPod.
I wouldn't recommend these for an iPod, no. Unless you're just a glutton for punishment and want to be reminded how bad your iTunes library music really does sound. these are pretty nice headphones, guys. So look for that review on Monday.
Wait, Tim, you're saying you're an audiophile from way back. Do you think that a lot of people today in the 18 to 30, let's say, age bracket could really care less about quality audio?
Yes, they could care less. But that's only because they've never experienced high-quality audio. Someone that's 18 years old or even 20 years old have really... You start getting into music around, 13?
Yeah.
And going forward. At 13 years old, you're not going to experience really good audio because the only thing you're going to get is little cheap headphones. Then they get a little bit older, the iPod's starting to get popular, so that's what you buy. Now that they're in college, they're listening to all their music on the computer on, little desktop speakers, or on their home entertainment center, but it's still compressed music, They've never really experienced a really good vinyl recording on a $400 or $500 stylus through a $600 pair of headphones. They've never experienced that audio quality. And it's probably akin to someone that drinks beer all the time and really doesn't understand what a fine wine is about. I would probably liken it to that.
Or fine beer. But,
yeah. We just got an email from Lee. Just got back from our New York City office, and the bad weather delayed everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Yep. So
he lives in my area, so I understand about that.
Yep. So no problem, Lee. We'll see you next week, I hope. But work has to come first. That's our podcast for this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with Chris Siebold. He said he's going to be on, but you never know. Something could come up. Talk about his new book. Hopefully, Chad Perry will join us if he's able.
I hope so.
And willing. I hope so, too. It's been a while since I've done the podcast at Chad's house. That'll be kind of strange, but it'll probably feel like homecoming for me. And hopefully, you'll be here next week, Guy.
I should be.
Gil, I want to thank you very much for being on the podcast this week. We're going to definitely have to have you back.
Yeah, I have a lot more museum pieces to talk about.
I'd like to get into that, but I really wanted Lee to be here to kind of chat about that.
And then Tim and I would just go away and you guys could battle it out.
I'd stay in. I've got a lot of computers. Don't get me wrong. I've got quite a few here myself, Guy. But that's our show this week, so I'm going to let you guys go. I'm going to go tell the wife she can free the kids from the silence room. And everyone have a great Mac week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.